Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we're going to have a little bit of a different show, but I think one, again, that's very important. If you really don't have skills, I think it puts people in a position where they're set up for whatever's coming, or I should say not set up for whatever's coming their way. And I don't believe that fear should ever lead in anybody's life, because when you're fearful, things happen to you. And I think we should all be as prepared and take our power back and to have a sense of balance. God is the center of my balance, and I'm sure it is for many of my listeners. And one thing that God's, I think he helps those who help themselves. I think that's a euphemism that's actually quite true. And today we're going to speak with Mr. Travis Maddox. This is somebody who actually lives what he preaches, and he has a website called The Prepared Homestead. He lives a life where he's in control. And not only that, but he's gracious enough to teach people how to do it and to be a foundation and a sounding board. So, Mr. Maddox, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because today's show is all about empowerment and how you don't have to feel like you can't control things.
That's absolutely right. Thank you very much for having me. This is an honor to be on your show. I'm familiar with your work, and I just wanted to start off by saying you are correct. It's preparedness is about empowering people to not be fearful of whatever it is, right? Whether it's a tornado or a hurricane or an economic collapse or a war. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen in our lives. And having a preparedness mentality and working towards that physically and mentally, it helps us avoid that fear and panic that can happen when things happen in our lives that aren't always great.
That's true. I think we'd like to control a lot of things, but in actuality, we don't. And one of the things that preparedness, in my mind's eye, it gives you resilience. And, you know, whatever comes at you, like, okay, I got this. I'm going to find a different way around it. I mean, that's really what life is, isn't it? If it were all stable and easy, it would be kind of boring, quite frankly. So if you can gather a skill, and if that only means that you can be self-reliant, that's an amazing skill to have, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is something, it's funny because so many times I get people that, talk to me about this, and they say, oh, this is impossible. We can't do this. Or that's just too much. Or, well, this is just crazy. Why would you want to do that? And to me, what's crazy is we're only at most, maybe at two or three generations, people that lived this way normally. I mean, our grandparents, they were self-sufficient preppers. They didn't know that they did, but they were, whether they lived in the city or the country, they had to have a much higher level of resiliency because the world wasn't as convenient then as it is now. You couldn't just have anything at your fingertips. You had to work a little harder. And when things got tough, there wasn't always a safety net there to catch you as there is now with a lot of people. And so it's not such a foreign idea. It's just something that's been quickly forgotten because, again, we live in a world that, whether we want to admit it or not, all of us, and I'm sure your listeners are all at different levels of, income and stuff. But the fact is that we live a pretty lavish lifestyle compared to, our ancestors. And I think it's caused us to, the negative side to our prosperous modern society is that we've forgotten that sometimes things do get bad. And there's not always someone there to protect us or to catch us. And so that's why we should take that power back into our own hands and do things, whether it's, learning how to grow a garden or, stock up a little bit more on food, other things that you can do to kind of take that power back into your own hands.
I think, you've come from this from a standpoint that was not really, it was counter in a way, right? I mean, you were, mm-hmm. you have a law enforcement background. You've been, I guess, very city oriented, I would think, right? And mm-hmm. you've come completely full circle. So I guess the first question I would ask is, how did you make that leap? Was it something that you decided, I just want to be forward thinking, or did something, not, you don't have to get personal or anything, but did something happen to make you think this way? Because right now I think people are they're in denial, and they're fearful that it's too hard to, like you said, too hard to do. Where do you start? So is there something mm-hmm. that got you rolling?
Sure. It's kind of a little bit of both of the scenarios you mentioned. My grandfather was a big influence in my life, and he was one of those old school, you know, very self-sufficient type people. He could do anything. He didn't have, he never even completed high school, but he was one of the smartest people I ever knew. And he gardened and he hunted and he made things and fixed things and had kind of a little self-sufficient homestead back before that's what it was called. So I got a lot of influence from him. You know, I was, you know, the one grandchild that was always running around following him, trying to be like him. And then, yes, I spent almost 20 years or so in law enforcement. So I am more than familiar with a very city and urban lifestyle. But I always had that yearning to get back to kind of those roots of living a more natural lifestyle. And so I started kind of prepping back during the Y2K thing. I wasn't really big into that. I honestly didn't think that the computers were all going to crash and all that. But, you know, I had some things put aside and was learning. And I was also an Eagle Scout, so I was big into like wilderness survival and things like that when I was younger. And then here in my area, and I live in the Missouri Ozarks, and I believe it was in 2007. Any of your listeners that are from here would certainly remember this. In 2007, we had a massive ice storm, and there were tens of thousands of people that were without power for, you know, some of them 2 to 3 weeks. We didn't have power at our house for 16 days. And I actually was working in law enforcement at that time. And there was a big wake-up call. Things could get bad really quick, and we have no control over this. During that time, the gas stations were, you know, very few of them were open because they were running out of, you know, there wasn't electricity to run the stores, to run the pumps. Grocery stores were shutting down because there was no electricity to keep the food cool. And it was pretty, you know, traumatic. And that was a real big springboard for me to realize that, okay, this idea or dream in the back of my mind of living more self-sufficient, being more prepared, I probably need to take it serious. And so from that point, I started reading a lot more books. That was really before the internet was, you know, videos and stuff were big. So I was reading a lot of books and just trying to learn as much as I could. I started gardening. I lived in a, you know, suburban neighborhood, but I was putting out gardens with goal of moving out and buying my own piece of land, which I did. Oh, goodness, now probably been about 6 or 7 years now that I've had my own. We've had our own land, and we've just been on this journey to be as self-sufficient as possible. You know, gardens, and every year it's something new. And, mm-hmm. and I tell my own listeners on my own channel that don't ever for one moment think that I've got it all figured out just because I've been doing this for a while. I'm still learning just like anyone else. I may be a little further down the road, but I'm still learning. And so every year, you know, we're trying something new. And sometimes it works, and a lot of times it's a failure. And so we know, okay, that's not going to work for us. We'll try this. So we, you know, we try different animals, and maybe some do really good and some not so much, or different types of plants or whatever it is. And it's just a, you know, an everyday journey. It's a lifestyle. For us, so that we raise our kids this way, we homeschool, and we do as much as we can to break apart from kind of the modern American culture, so that, you know, if that ever falls, then we're not going to go down with it, you know,
yeah.
So that we can, you know, we could live without electricity if we needed to. We could, you know, live without going to the grocery store if we need to. We're, you know, those are some of our goals that we work towards. So it's certainly something that it's attainable for people. Even starting now, it's certainly attainable.
Well, let's take our first break because I want to go into that mindset, because I think it's, you take a little, like you described, small bites, and the next thing you know, you've achieved what you want to without being mm-hmm. overwhelmed. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Travis Maddox. And before the break, you were giving a wonderful synopsis of how you came to think outside the box. And homesteading is a bit outside the box, but I think a lot more people are becoming turned on to it because it's a self-reliant, self-sufficient lifestyle. And, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to be living in a rural area, do you, in order to?
No.
And that's what people need to know. They think that you have to move out to away from everybody and have your own tract of land, but there's lots of ways to do this, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly, you know, if you have more land, you're going to be able to have more animals or mm-hmm. bigger garden. So there's certain advantages to it, but in no way, you know, living in the city is going to prevent you from this. In fact, the urban homesteading movement has grown to be pretty big. And I have known several people that they produce an immense amount of food, you know, in their backyard, in their little suburban neighborhood. I've talked on my channel several times. You may not be able to grow as much as I do here on our property, but you can still grow a lot. There's a lot of garden vegetables and culinary herbs and medicinal herbs that actually do really well in flower pots. And some of them do well inside your home, and some of them need to be out on the balcony or the porch. But, you know, you can do that. There's, you know, grow lights that you can have in your home. There's, you know, small hydroponic systems that mm-hmm. you can have in your home. There's a lot of options to being more self-sufficient in your home. So don't, you know, any of your listeners need to not think that it's just for people that live out in the country. You know, oh, this show is only for those folks that live out in the country. That's not true. I mean, if you live in a high rise apartment in downtown Chicago, if you want to, you can be more self-sufficient. You can have more control over your food, more control over your life if you choose to.
Well, I mean, that's an empowering statement right there, because it's attainable. You don't have to mm-hmm. leave everything. I think that's another thing that maybe a misconception, that you have to sacrifice, that you have to leave the comforts of whatever it is. It's not necessarily about that. It's about when mm-hmm. things hit the fan that you can still maintain your health, your
right.
your safety, your, I mean, really the quality of life comes down to health and safety and God, quite frankly.
Sure.
The rest of this stuff is kind of superfluous. And you're not going to want, you don't care about the big screen TV when you're talking about, I need water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Oh, yeah.
So let's, you gave a great synopsis, and I can speak personally, having a hydroponic system in your room, in your house with lights that go on and off really does work. And mm-hmm. in terms of seeds, because, you know, you're going to have to start somewhere. Is there seed banks? I mean, should you be looking for heirloom seeds? Because it can't just be some trash. It actually has to be something that's healthy, right?
Right. Yeah. You end up in a, you know, a situation where you just can't afford anything. I mean, something's better than nothing.
True.
Seed better than, yeah, there, you know, any type of seed will work if that's all you can have, get your hands on. But of course, you want to have a better quality, something that produces a just a higher quality, and very popular, because basically what that means is those are the older varieties. These are the varieties your parents or your grandparents used, and there's much less chance of them being altered, They're typically not genetically modified. And then also another thing with the heirloom is they're generally more hardy. So they were being, you know, these old tomato plants were being grown when people didn't have a lot of, you know, pesticides and chemicals and fertilizers, that the plant had to kind of grow on its own. Mm-hmm. And so these heirloom seeds are a lot hardier. So I would recommend, you know, doing that, of starting off with getting you some seeds. And like I said, there's some good reputable companies out on the market now that do that. And then, especially if you're just starting out, I mean, there's an art and a science to it both. Gardening, there's a learning curve to it. And I've been gardening most of my life. And even this year, there's certain parts of my garden that just aren't doing that well. And so you need to be kind of practicing now, even if you don't need it. You know, I encourage people to start planting food now, even if it's just a little bit, so that you're learning how to do it, because there's certainly a learning curve to gardening. And every year, you know, some things do great and other things don't, and it could, you know, reverse the next year. So start getting books. There's some great YouTube channels out there on gardening, so that you can learn how to do that, because that's probably the first big step you need to, is becoming, you know, as self-sufficient as you can in your food.
Agree. And, you know, the basics are food, and then there's water as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that it's, you would think it'd be kind of straightforward to keep water and save it, but that's not quite true, is it? I mean, I think I've had plastic containers and they didn't last very long. Is there something, right, something that you need to know in order to actually save what good quality water over time?
Well, there's two things to look at. Number one, it's water storage, which is what you're talking about. And the other is being able to clean water that you can find. So if you live near a creek or a river or a pond or something like that, that's a good stable water source. If things got really bad, you could go gather water from that. But of course, you want to clean it. So you want to have a good water filtration, something like a gravity water filter. And I'm not promoting this, but most people are familiar with something like a Berkey system. Mm-hmm. Those are really good. And there's other brands that are similar to them. And then as far as water storage, you know, you can only store so much, because water is bulky and heavy. At minimum, an individual needs 3 gallons of water a day. And that's to drink, to cook. You know, that's the very minimum. And it's usually somewhere between 3 and 6 gallons is the minimum. Well, it doesn't take long to figure up that that's a lot of water, even in just 3 days. So most people probably aren't going to be able to store the water, but they do make containers. If you have a garage and you've got the room in it, you can buy 55-gallon food-grade containers. That's an easy way, and those aren't too terribly expensive to store a lot of water. There's 5-gallon containers that you can buy. If you're storing water, though, for any length of time, number one, you want to rotate it out if at all possible. So if you're storing water in a 5-gallon buckets or 5-gallon containers, if you are going to have to store it for long term and you're not able to, you probably want to add a few drops of bleach to the water to stabilize it, to keep any bacteria from potentially growing in that water. Even if the water came from a city source that has been treated, you still want to add, you know, a few drops of bleach per gallon to make sure that the water doesn't grow any bacteria.
That's a good idea. And on the same storage level here, about fuel, that seems, I mean, we are in all sorts of gas crunches right now. Is there mm-hmm. a way to store fuel that's a safe way?
There are ways, and safety is one of the key things, because just imagine it had 20 or 30 gallons of fuel stored and somehow it caught on fire. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be a very deadly disaster. Mm-hmm. I don't ever recommend storing fuel in a garage that's attached to the house. And I know people do it. I know people that's the only way they have to store it. But most home fires start in a garage. And if you've got gasoline stored in there or diesel fuel, it can accelerate fire. So if you're planning on storing fuel, try to have some type of shed that's not attached to your home. And, you know, depending on what you're planning on using it for, some people, and we try to do this here, I'm not real successful, but we try to do this, of having our fuel here at the home, and that's what we put in the cars or the truck, and then we refill that gasoline in those cans. That way we've always got extra fuel here at the house if we need to. You do need to treat gasoline, though. Gasoline only has a shelf life of 6 to 9 months, typically. But most of your, you know, an auto part store or farm store, they have what's called gasoline or fuel stabilizer. And it's real easy to use, tells you how much to put in it per gallon. And it's not that expensive. So if you plan on storing gasoline or diesel fuel, I would highly recommend getting some of this so that you can treat it so that it doesn't go bad. Mm-hmm. The other fuel source that's, you know, it's not maybe something you're going to use in your vehicle, but you could use it to heat or to cook with is propane. And propane is much more stable. It's a lot safer. And the big thing is its shelf life is pretty much indefinite. As long as the propane can doesn't rust out, the propane inside will last forever. So, you know, if you're looking to have an alternative heat source or an alternative way to cook, if the power goes out, propane should, you know, would be something to definitely look at because it's easier to store it.
That's good to know. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Travis Maddox. And you have a podcast, correct? And a YouTube presence, right?
Yes. I mostly do my work on YouTube, but I do have a few other places that I post things. But it's predominantly on YouTube. And it's The Prepared Homestead. You can search for it over there on YouTube.
Oh, they can subscribe, can't they? As well?
Yes, they can subscribe to the YouTube channel, and I post videos pretty much every day. And they can be, it's a wide variety. Sometimes it's just how to do this, how to get prepared, how to garden. Other times I'm talking about current events and things in the news. You know, I try not to get deep into the politics, but just that people are aware that, you know, maybe there's less food in the supply chain because of this or that. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, what we talk about over on YouTube a lot. I also have another website that people can go to that we've been promoting, and it's called tphnetwork.com. And it's a social network site, and it functions very much like Facebook, but it's completely separate. You know, I own all the data to it. It's not something that people are stealing data and that sort of thing. And it's for anyone that's preparedness minded, anyone that's homestead minded, living, you know, they're just wanting to learn. And there's about 6,000 people on there right now. And there's just lots and lots of information being shared. It's a very much a free speech platform, you know, medical freedom, all kinds of things there.
What strikes me about it, it's about community. And
yes,
that is so empowering because right now you're always looking over your shoulder or somehow self-censoring because you want to stay on some sort of platform. But it's really a breath of fresh air to know that there isn't a place that people can go that is sacrosanct. You know, there's not people trying to use you for something. It's about sharing. And from the heart, it seems like.
Right. And that's been my biggest focus, at least in the last year or so. I mean, I still put a lot of focus on, you know, teaching people and waking people up to what's going on in the world. But a big focus has been on helping people find community. You know, I'm really trying to encourage people to start local meetings in their community. And we're starting to see that very regular on my YouTube channel. I make announcements for, you know, various different meetings all over the country for, you know, homesteaders or gardening or self-sufficient living and for preppers and stuff. And that's what this website I mentioned is about, is to help people find each other. Because with everything that's going on in the world today, and you know, certainly it's a lot, and it's like growing constantly, folks like you and I, a lot of times start to feel like we're alone. Like there's no one like us. Am I the only person out there that thinks like this? And you're not. We're not. There's many others that are very much like us, and that want the same kind of lifestyle, and they want that same level of freedom. And so to do the best we can to help people connect, and that's been our big focus. We host monthly meetings in my area. In fact, we've got one coming up this Sunday. And it's like a big, you know, like a family event. It's like an afternoon church social or something like that. And we'll have 200 or 300 people come with all their children. And we have special speakers that talk about different things. This Sunday, we've got a dentist that's coming in, and he's going to teach us how to put together an emergency dental kit to keep in our homes in case something happens with your teeth and you don't have a dentist around. And that's the kind of stuff that we do on a local basis. And so that's been our really big focus, is using the platform that we have on YouTube and trying to encourage other people to make connections so that they're not alone out there.
I think that community it's a secret weapon, really, because it's like this force field against all this negativity, all this division. You would think, watching TV, if you dare to do it these days, everybody's against everybody, and somebody wants to take what you have because it's not fair. Most people, I don't care what color they are, do not think that way. And this is the difference when you can actually speak to somebody, get them, you know, engage them, you realize how much you have in common. It totally tears down walls. It always has.
Absolutely.
I think that's why it's being made to be such, you know, a divisive society, because they know they can't win if people are like, you know.
I think that's got to be at one of the top of their agenda, is to divide us. It's just everywhere we turn, there's so much divisiveness. And that's one of the things we do, you know, we have people from all walks of life come to our meetings, of all different skin color and different religious beliefs, and different economic standing. I mean, you know, financial standing. It's from all walks of life. And they all come with, you know, one thing. They want to have that kind of more traditional, conservative, you know, family-driven lifestyle. And that's what they're coming to learn.
You know, it's interesting, this whole using words as weapons, conservative versus liberalism, just always, progressivism always strikes me as it's the actual opposite, because the people who believe in individual choice and freedom and the person's ability to be their own, to control their own body, are the ones who are conservative. It's the people who are progressive who want to control, micromanage everything. And it never works.
Absolutely.
I mean, but how do we get to this point where we let language be completely, it's become abusive? How do we let that happen?
I ask myself that a lot. You could go as far back as, say, you know, the Roosevelt administration of, you know, trying to get people to become more dependent on government. And then we can see things that's happened in the media, starting with television and movies, and now the internet, I believe it's dividing us. And it's making us believe that, you know, that community is not necessary, that we don't, even though so much online, they make it look like it's community. It's this false community. It's this false, which is what we see out of the progressive movement. Everything, like you said, they claim that they're for choice. But it's not. And everything we see, it's this false. It's like a mirror image of what truth and righteousness is. And I think that's, you know, without going into other things, I think it's very much what we see out of the Bible. And this is the world that we're living in now. And so for those of us that don't fall under that, that don't adhere to those ways, I think it's good for us to make connections. And we do have the internet, which has its a lot of, you know, negativity there, but at least use it while we have it to make connections with people and to build that community locally, and then the greater community of people of you know, like mind that are wanting to keep that traditional lifestyle.
I think you're right. And, you know, you can use anything as a tool for good. And mm-hmm. the fact that most of it is off of the internet is what makes it even more potent, because it's mm-hmm. it's direct communication. There's nothing like passing right. energy between people, not electronically, but seeing facial expressions, hearing the voice, shaking a hand, whatever it is that actually gives us our connections. You know, if on the flip side of this, if the internet and all these social platforms were so awesome, you wouldn't see this much loneliness, this much emotional destitution that you see if it was what they say it is. It's not about community at all. It did a great job, though, of putting that out there and changing the meaning and the energy and the direction. But I think it's not working anymore. I think it's become so ridiculous that a lot of people are now looking for something else because they're not fulfilled. And so they didn't achieve their objective. I think if we just stopped listening to all the rhetoric, we would realize that this is not winning.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think that we kind of saw through their illusion and their agenda just the past 2 years of trying to get people more isolated from each other.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, I mean, that's been this agenda. And how much have, you know, we all heard of the stories of depression and even rise in suicide rates, just, you know, mental illnesses that have become, you know, even worse because of this isolation. We weren't created to be that way.
No.
We were created to be a communal people. And I think that is part of this agenda, to keep us, you know, keep us as isolated from each other as we can, because it also prevents us from sharing ideas. And like you said, sharing that energy, that connection, you know, at our local meeting, the meeting lasts for about 2 hours. But when people come 2 or 3 hours ahead of time, and my wife and I, we're there till 9 o'clock at night sometimes, because people just, they don't want to leave. They want to sit around and talk and tell stories. And it's, you know, has a very much of a family atmosphere. And I think so many people are craving that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really sad, too.
It is sad. But, you know, I think you and I probably are the same generation where we grew up with this. So mm-hmm. we know what this is. But for folks who don't have it, maybe this is a good thing. It's making them leave their comforts. Well, it's not even comfortable, quite frankly, but leave the zone that they're in to see that there is a bigger picture and that there is another way. And just because someone looks a certain way or dresses a certain way doesn't mean it defines them. If we can break through that, then there's no way that down the road that we can fall into this trap again. And I think we're moving that way one person at a time. But what you do is just, you're doing it at hyper speed, really. So let's take our last break and come back. Mm-hmm. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're having a really fun and important conversation with Mr. Travis Maddox. And, you know, I just love the fact that you've got people coming from all over who somehow, like minds, are just kind of drawn to each other. And let me ask, I mean, I can imagine at the end of one of these gatherings that people just feel just empowered, energized, ready to go out there and find other people, right? And the community is growing by grassroots, I would think.
Yes, that is true. And you have to understand where we host these meetings. It's in a community center in a place that's not even an incorporated city. There may be 150 to 180 people that live right around that area. So it's a very, very small, extremely rural. And like I said, we'll have 200 to 300 people there on a Sunday afternoon. And people in the community that live around there, they know about it. We've had people show up that one couple showed up a few months ago and they were purchasing some firewood for their house and talking to the guy about trying to find others like them. And he said, hey, there's a meeting they have up here every month. Why don't you go there? We have people that travel from all over the country, as far away as from Maine and California and Florida. And they come here to learn how we're doing it, what we're doing, which is good. But in some ways, it's strange that people don't even know how to build something like this. But they come here and they sit in our meetings so that they can learn and go back and they try to replicate it in their own area. Because, you know, it's not just about prepping or homesteading. It's about building community and building that family feeling.
And that's amazing. And every person you touch goes back into their community. That's a whole nother fire that started. Now, you mentioned that you homeschool your children. Is there any in the homesteading community? I mean, I know a lot of teachers have left the rigid teaching structure. Is there some sort of free flowing, like teachers that can connect with kids online, or one teacher teaching multiple children? So it's not just the parents doing it, but it's a bigger network.
I'm not sure if there is. I'm sure there probably is, I guess. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but I'm not 100% confident if there is. I know in a local level, like we're part of a homeschool co-op. My wife is actually a teacher, or was a teacher. Mm. And we're part of a homeschool co-op. And so that's part of what they do, is that. But that's on a local level. As far as on a national level online, I'm not really sure. It would certainly be a good thing for someone to start. But if, you know, it wouldn't hurt to look for something like that. But it is becoming more popular because of what's going on in our school systems. Mm. I mean, you know, people don't want to have their children being exposed to this progressive agenda that are being in every school now. It's not just in progressive areas.
No, it's not about education anymore. It's indoctrination.
No.
I mean, you speak about your grandfather. He learned more in his time in school than we probably have in college, right? They knew a lot more. They don't even teach half the stuff that are the senior generation was taught. I mean, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what kids do all day in school, but it's not really learning. Can't read, can't write, can't make a structure, can't understand cursive. I mean, the list is endless on this catastrophe, because this is the next generation. They don't know how to do anything. But if we can actually, my next question is, how young are the people coming to the homesteading?
Oh my goodness, all different ages.
Okay.
We have young couples that are 20 years old or so. We have people all the way up to in their 80s and 90s. We have entire families, lots of young kids. We usually have on average, probably a couple of dozen younger children. And where we meet outside, there's a park. So they go out there and play for part of the time. There's young married couples. And that's been one of the more exciting things. It's not surprising to see older people from like our generation and older, mm-hmm. but to see these younger people show up that are in their 20s and they're craving it. They're more excited than the older generation because they know that this stuff exists. They just don't know anything about it. And they're craving just to learn how to plant a tomato or, you know, how to, you know, butcher a chicken or, you know, can vegetables. They want that. And they are, you know, at least some of them are starting to realize that this world we've created for ourselves isn't as stable as we always thought it was.
No.
So it is good to see a lot of younger people coming to our meeting.
Well, that's encouraging. Now, we talked about growing food by yourself and being really self-reliant, but what about people who don't feel like they can do that? Are there companies that they can purchase food that will last them a while and that is packaged for long-term use, like a bit of a shortcut?
Sure. There are emergency, like freeze-dried food that you can buy in buckets. That is certainly something that you want to do. The price is a little higher than if you just bought regular food, but this stuff's going to last, you know, 20 to 30 years. You can also just buy regular canned vegetables, canned food. You know, those have a shelf life of, you know, at least 3 to 4 years. And whatever you are stocking up in your food preps, you should be using that and rotating it. Mm. You know, our foods that we have stocked away, they're not just going to sit there for the next 20 years. That's stuff that's our working pantry. When my wife cooks or I cook, you know, we go to our pantry and we shop out of that. And that's something that our grandparents used to do. And we should start doing that also. It's a way to, you know, avoid something like what I mentioned in the beginning, an ice storm or a tornado or a hurricane. Maybe you can't go to the grocery store for a few days or even a week or so. And knowing that you have, you know, at least say a 3 month food supply in your pantry, it's a good insurance policy to have against, you know, some type of disaster.
That's a good point. And I would think that from a health perspective, having a really good first aid kit too, knowing what plants can be medicinal would be also a key thing to learn.
Absolutely. You know, having a first aid kit, like you said, is necessary. And learning, having some good books to learn. I mean, most of us can't be doctors, but we can learn how to take care of minor things in the home. And then, like you said, medicinal plants, there's probably some that grow right around every listener's home, you know, different mm-hmm. plants that have a medicinal property. And so learn what those are and how to use them, because we don't know at what point we may not have access to that kind of stuff. We don't know how far down the road this, what's happening to our country and to our world, is going to take us. And so we need to be prepared.
You know, I think that's, again, if you're prepared, you have a lot of power and a lot of choice. You just don't want to be mm-hmm. in a position where you're stuck with whatever is thrown at you and you just have to take it and you don't have options. It's always about options, isn't it?
Right. That's right. Yes. And that's something that our, you know, people in power typically don't want us to have. They want us to be dependent upon them. And I read once, one of the greatest acts of rebellion you can do is to just become self-sufficient, you know, grow a garden, you know, not be dependent upon other people as much as possible.
I couldn't have said it better. And at last, I know we don't have a lot of time, but I just wanted to talk about fuel sources, you know, batteries mm-hmm. versus solar power generators, solar power generators. Are these really necessary things? I mean, you live in a cold climate, so when winter comes, if your power goes out, you know, you don't have access to wood for whatever reason, is a solar generator reasonable?
They can be, and a solar generator is something that's convenient because it's kind of all packaged together. If you have a little bit more of a technical skill, you're going to save money if you just buy things like a power inverter and a battery and put together, kind of build your own solar mm-hmm. generator. But solar generators work for, you know, charging phones and keeping a refrigerator going. You're not going to run your whole house off of one, but you can run some basic things to kind of get you through a tough time for sure. And then having solar panels, this stuff has gone down in price, so it's become much more affordable to buy small packages that, you know, like I said, may not run your whole home, but, you know, it may keep your freezer going so that you don't lose all the food that's in it or something like that.
That's a really good point. I mean, people spend a lot of time stocking up their freezers, but I don't think they think about what happens if you lose power. All those frozen foods, I mean, they're gone. So it's something to maintain all your hard work, I think, is probably a really good idea. And people don't necessarily think about that. And the next thing or last thing I want to discuss briefly would be phones. I mean, your cell phone may not work, but would you recommend satellite phones versus walkie-talkies, something with your ham radios, things that you can still communicate with people?
I highly recommend ham radios because they're actually quite reasonably priced. You can buy them pretty cheap. We have several. And we do classes at our meetings occasionally on ham radios. You do have to have a license to operate one, but the license has become really easy to get. I mean, I've seen children at 8 and 9 years old pass the test. So it's, It's not difficult. You don't have to know Morse code anymore. So that would be something that I would get. You know, for $40, you can have a walkie-talkie. For $200, you can have a really nice ham radio that you can talk 50 to 100 miles away with people. So that would be something that most anyone can do. Satellite phones, they're pretty pricey. So you're going to, there's a lot less people that could afford to have those. But I would strongly suggest everyone to look into ham radios, even if you don't plan on using it. If you just want to have it there in case something happens, I would certainly do that because you can pick them up pretty cheap.
That's a good point. Now, we only have a few seconds, unfortunately. Time goes way too fast. But I want to make sure people know how to get your go to your YouTube, go to your website, and join whatever things that you're having locally.
Certainly. You can go to YouTube and just search for The Prepared Homestead. I'm the guy with the big beard. If you want to go to our social media site, it's tphnetwork.com. You can find us there. If you just have any questions about our local meeting, maybe you live in the Missouri Ozarks and want to come, you can shoot me an email at preparedhomestead@protonmail.com. And I try to answer all my emails.
You know, Mr. Maddox, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I learned a great deal. I'm looking forward to putting a lot more of things. I'm on the right track, but you can always do more. And I feel, hey, I can do this. It's not that hard. Just put your head down and do one thing at a time. Next thing you know, you're going to be resilient and you'll be part of this thriving community, which is not going to be victimized by anybody. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Right. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor to be on your show. It really has been.
Well, it's been an honor to have you, and thank you for all you do. I look forward to having you come back in the future.
Anytime.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.